So thanks everybody who made it today. And let's see, we have up first today, we have an RFC from Theo to add more methods to iter. It is RFC number 43, if everybody would like to take a look. This looks good to me. I don't know. Anybody else has any comments before we vote?
I don't have any comments. It looks good to me. The changes that I requested looks like those are done.
All right. So on thumbs up. Anybody thumbs down? Okay then. Let's merge that sucker. Wait, how did I manage to do that? Yeah, okay. All righty. I got a squash. Wait, no. Squash and merge. Okay. Alrighty. On to pull requests. We have Benoit's pull request number 1364. As much as I understand this, this looks good to me. I wish Sylvan was here to have a look at it. Joe, how do you feel comfortable at all in this part of the code base? I'm moderately comfortable, but not super comfortable.
I haven't quite had a chance to take a look at it yet. Don't have an opinion as of right now. Looks like it'll take some time to look through it.
Is this one, Benoit, where you want to wait to have Sylvan take a look at it, or are you feeling good about it?
I think it's good.
Okay, so it looks right to me for the 70% of it that I completely follow what it's doing. Joe, do you want to look at it before we merge, or
I'll look at it after the call and then merge it when I'm done.
Okay, all right, that sounds good. The other one that we had here. The other one that we had here, I had tagged this. So we had the one that was opened a while back, 1224, the dragonfly one. This was opened and, there were a few changes that would have to be made for it. Do we want to pick this up ourselves? Do we want to take on supporting Dragonfly at this point? And then have somebody finish off, take that PR and finish it off? Or do we just kind of want to let this sit here, and if they come back, then that's good? Nobody really seems to be clamoring for Dragonfly, so my thought on it at this point is to just leave it, but I'd like, that's if anybody else has a different opinion.
I would generally kind of agree that I don't know, it needs somebody to care about it enough to finish the PR before we can merge it, and we also kind of need to discuss what it means to call it supported or not supported, and whether we have like a CI structure for it or not. I think that's stuff that we've talked about a bit in the past, but
yeah, I mean, we have no BSD CI at this point, so it should work, for any BSD, but we, I don't think any of us have BSD setups at this point in order to verify that that's something we could do in the future. But at best, it would be it should probably work in best effort and community-driven support to fix it if it does break. So yeah, so let's just leave it, and if somebody comes back and picks it up, they do.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in the future, we might have to discuss like whether we need like some sort of system for dealing with PRs that that have been sitting idle for a while. But I think we can let it sit a while longer before it comes to that. I mean, yeah.
Okay, let's see. All right, we're on to issues now. I have some tagged that were actually questions specifically for Sylvan related to things he'd said in the past. So skipping over those. So let's see. This is one I tagged. We had 717, and there was some more conversation around that about a month ago between Benoit, you, and in response to something I'd asked on that. I'm not really sure. So at this point, are we saying that this is something that we can pick up work on? Is this something that we want to do as an RFC for, or just leave it where it's marked as ready for work and somebody can start picking up and doing something around getting integration tests that run?
As I said in that last comment, I like the idea of having some JIT oriented tests that would deal with some specific cases of problems we've seen in the past. But I also kind of like the idea of having separately some integration tests that just prove that the whole language is kind of working as expected for some basic examples in a way that is sort of outside of the pony test framework because it's running like a sub process, but is also automated. So it's not relying on somebody to go through and compile the examples and make sure that you can actually make an HTTP request. So I'd kind of like to leave it open and say, if somebody wants to take on adding a subprocess oriented integration test, that we would welcome that and see it as sort of something we would want. But I'm not clamoring to do it myself right now.
Okay, that seems reasonable. Okay, that doesn't need discussion anymore on that. That's a Sylvan type system one. Okay, working backwards through ones we had here. Well, from the backwards to the front. Going back to September 9th, we had 1208. This is one that I do not know much about particularly, but there was some update after the last time we had discussed it. Anybody here particularly knowledgeable about building RPM packages? I think I saw Kevin on here who might know like what the right path forward on this is, that we could give some more direction on this for somebody to pick up.
I need to spend some time reading all these comments here.
All right. Do you have time to take a look at it and at least provide some pointer or update on what the right thing to do would be in this particular case?
Yeah, I do. Let me look at it.
Okay, awesome. Thank you very much, Kevin. Sweet. So I opened one up a while ago. So we have the it was discussed but not fully resolved thing for consider turning on LTO across all platforms. From reading what you put on there, Joe, it sounds like this could be kind of a nightmare that we could dig ourselves into. And at least my thought on this is that we should probably not take this on at this point on Linux. And I could close this for now, given how it seems to be a thorny mess. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think closing it for now is fine. I mean, it's nice to have the historical documentation there. If somebody is wanting to, you know, investigate it further, I think that, you know, that they'll be able to do so without necessarily having to stick it open. So.
Okay. All right. Let's see. What's that? Another fun one. See, is this one still? Okay. So, issue 1331. This seems to be. Looks like this was one where. So with the builds that we're doing on Travis, it looks like the Travis CI build servers support AVX2 in addition to AVX, but some older CPUs don't support AVX2. I think we have a choice here of we can either document in the README that you have to have a CPU that supports AVX2 in order to use the standard builds that we provide, or we need to find a way to turn off that particular feature so we could have a lower common denominator and people have to build support to get it. Thoughts one way or the other, which way we should go?
I just quickly scanned through the make file and I don't see anywhere where we're configuring AVX in any way.
Yeah, we're not. We just go with whatever gets picked up as the default for the CPU that it's being built on.
Right. I think for now, I think probably with that in mind, just documenting the limitation is probably the best way forward. And then if somebody sees that and says, I know how to fix this. They can swoop in and do it. But I think for now, just documenting that your CPU has to support AVX2 and maybe figuring out a way to determine for people to be able to easily determine whether it does. some way for people to say, does my CPU support AVX2? Maybe that's more difficult.
Yeah, I don't think there's no wrong answers on this one here. We could go either way. That's certainly a
okay. It looks like it's in CPU info. Proc CPU info. Yeah, so someone can check that way. Okay, I'll make a comment on there. No, you already did. Okay, I'm just going to add a comment that says how to check if your CPU supports AVX2, and then that will can be added to the README for somebody who's wandering in and wants to know. if they can run it, the pre-built version.
Awesome. Sounds good. We have one more issue for today, possibly. Let's make sure it's okay, so let's see. 1351. This is the floating point min value is inconsistent one that you opened up, Benoit. Let me bring myself up to date again on this. Yeah. I think this is I think this is good, Benoit. You ready to move forward with this? I think we're all in agreement on this, yes?
Yes.
So
I think I'll make a pull request tomorrow or sometime next week.
Okay, so should I mark this as something you've already started on and assign you to it so nobody else tries to pick it up?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, all right. And that's the end of our issues, which means that we're on to conversation time, of which we have a few from the dev list, which we could go through. But does anybody have anything that they would like to bring up at this point in time? Anything to discuss?
There was RFC marked needs discussion.
Oh, right. That's right. There was, wasn't there? I forgot all about that. Which one was that? Oh, right.
Method chaining.
Yes. Let's talk about sugar. Oh my God. Yes. Let's put this one to bed so that we can start on it. Oh, dear God. Yes.
So it looks like Benoit came up with some good semantics that work, and he's got it working in his fork. As far as I can tell, the main point of contention still is around the syntax for what it should look like.
I'll say this. I don't really care what the syntax looks like at this point. I mean, they just look like a couple different symbols to me. So whatever you guys think is best. I don't have any opinion. If you want to, do you guys have any kind of agreement at this point? Let's see. I'm trying to see here.
So right now I'm kind of favoring, Nicholas's, suggestion of the dot greater than.
I like the dot greater than, Which did you which did you do for it on your fork, Benoit?
He also used the dot greater than.
I did. Yeah, but I don't have a really strong opinion on that.
It's done. Joe likes it. I don't care. Malthy, who's been involved with this, said, I don't think it's a terrible choice. I think it's reasonable to go with that. I mean,
does anybody on the call have any reservations about using dot greater than for method chaining, for basically call this method and then push the receiver forward as a result of the expression?
I'm going to take that as a no.
Okay.
So I mean, the worst case scenario, we're Flea 1.0 and we have to change it. But I think it would be nice to get this in so we can start making like the larger API changes for things where we no longer have to return this and can start doing more interesting things. And yeah, you know, it's been quite a while that we've been going around on syntax for this with it dying occasionally. I'm happy to get anything where they're like, I'm looking at it like, yeah, okay, that looks good.
Yeah, I would love to get rid of the functions that return this. I think it's
I've been dying for that.
Counterproductive. Yeah. Okay, well, I will leave a comment saying that there's kind of general consensus on the sync call, or I guess it's just me that likes that syntax and everybody else is okay with it. Malta is pushing the colon still, and I still have concerns about that being ambiguous. I mean, does anybody else have concerns about using colon?
I have some worries that might conflict in odd ways with other grammar where we already use the colon.
It doesn't. It's in another context.
Okay, so
sort of a conceptual conflict.
If I look at between the two, I like the dot greater than slightly more than the colon. It seems more method call-y.
Yeah, I mean my main concern is around, you know, sort of a conceptual conflict around the colon being used in so many different ways that it can be hard as a reader to sort of get your bearings in what's going on. I expect it kind of would be in if this were in a dense piece of code.
Yeah. The more I look at them on the screen at the same time, the more I like the colon greater, the dot greater than.
Okay. Well, I will leave a comment somewhat to that effect, but it'll... I don't. I mean, it'll be up to Malta to change the RFC if he wants to push it forward. I think. Otherwise, I mean, if for some reason that didn't happen, we could open a competing RFC to just get it through. But it seems like he's more or less okay with the dot greater than. So
yeah,
we should be able to move forward.
So awesome! I can't wait to get that in, and then we can go through and change all those thises. To, I don't know, something, anything. It'll be fun to watch things work for some definition of fun. Do folks have anything else before we move to some things that looks like we might have from a couple things we might have from the dev list? So, Joe, the changelog chain stuff, right?
That'd be a good thing to talk about now. You're right.
Yeah. Well, no, there's a few things we have there hanging out there that I started from the dev list. I'm just start working backwards. So the changelog, I didn't want to open that PR yet until I knew, like, are you planning on doing the automated thing anytime soon? I mean, because if you are, then I'd rather save myself the 15 minutes of writing something up nice. But if you're not, I'll go ahead and write that up for the change to the top of the changelog for now.
You can write that up for the top of the changelog regardless of whether the automated changelog stuff comes in. I think that will still be appropriate there.
And okay.
The problem. It's for the benefit of the reader, I think, more than the writer. So.
All right. Okay. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. I was thinking about writing it from the standpoint of this is where you should put your change based on these things. But you're right. I can write it from the standpoint of this is what these different categories mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that we don't pollute that other issue. What were you thinking with the tags that you were creating, and how would that work? And for the automated, do you have a solid idea that you? Or a semi-solid idea that you want to discuss?
I have two semi-solid ideas. I guess you could say they're like gelatinous. so kind of your kind of alternatives. My original thought, this is one of the two ideas, my original thought was that the flow would basically look like when merging a PR, you would make sure that it had the right changelog tag, so a tag that tells which part of the changelog it would go into.
Could it have more than one tag where it does more than one, where it both changes something and like fixes something?
Right. So it could, but in this system, it would be using the PR title as the changelog item description, which I think would be okay if we got in the habit of when we merge, making sure that we edit the title to be appropriate for the changelog. And I think there'd be some nice consistency there when people are searching through issues based on the changelog. So there's some things there, but one sort of downside would be that if we wanted to have different comments for like if something did a change, like API change and a fix as part of the same PR, and we wanted to do different comments for the change part versus the fix part, which I could see sometimes at least maybe wanting to do that. I think that'd be difficult if we were using the title as the PR, as the changelog item description. So the sort of other idea that I came up with in light of that, which might be a little bit simpler, is the proof of concept script that I wrote that is already sort of doing this based on the tags. It also, via the GitHub API, it also has access to the ticket description, so the body of text at the top of the ticket. What I was thinking is possibly having like a special syntax that is picked up there. For example, you could say like exclamation point change log and then type what you want to appear in the change log following that. And then the script would go through all the PRs that were merged since the last row. So it basically the flow, either way, the flow for the script works like when you want to do a release, you run the script and the script would create the tag and it would do a commit that would get tagged, that then the commit would have the change log update. So there would be, the downside of this automated change log stuff is that there would be no unreleased section. People would have to find that out through other ways or run the script locally to see what was unreleased. It could have an option just to show what's unreleased instead of doing a release. But basically you would run the script to do a release and it would go find all the PRs that have been merged since the last release and either look at the tag and the PR title or look at the look for the little special magic words in the PR description. And basically pull out which PRs had changelog impacts and insert them in the correct places. So either way, it's something that could be done. Like if you found that, oh, I need to do release, but oh crap, we forgot to say the magic words in this one PR that was merged. You could go back, as somebody who owns the Pony repo, somebody in the core team can go back, and maybe the contributors can, or sorry, maybe the committers can too, I'm not sure, but people who are in the Pony team can edit someone else's PR description and edit someone else's PR title if they need to. So I think that can work out okay if we see, oh, well, this was supposed to be included in the change log, but it didn't make it in there when I tried to run the script, so I'm going back, editing the PR description or the PR title, and then running it again. So that's kind of the general flow. Like I said, there's the two competing ideas of whether to use labels and the PR title or whether to use some form of magic words in the PR description. But the general idea is, yeah, the change log is assembled at the time that you do the release.
I think starting with using the labels and the title makes sense, right? And like, because we're probably, I mean, most of them would only ever get one label, and we could see what it looks like if we do more than one. Instead of maybe doing this at release, is there any reason why we can't do this at the time that we merge the commits down?
Yeah, I thought about that approach as well. The difference is that it kind of needs either we would need to either like run a script locally to merge instead of hitting the merge button, which I don't really like that much, or we'd need to have some sort of GitHub integration. You know, basically, like I know like Rust has a bot that they use for various things that checks the status of tickets and does various operations based on that. We could consider having some sort of bot or integration that did things like that, but it would almost certainly require like to be like self-hosted by us somewhere. So I can do that approach if that's something that we want. In our CI and whatnot, we've been tending to avoid self-hosted services. So I didn't really see that as being compatible. But if that's something that we want to do, I can look at it that way and work on a little pony bot that after a PR is merged, if it had a change log impact, then, or possibly if, you know, if one of the core team comes in and just, you know, adds a comment to a ticket that says, you know, this, that says the magic words that send the PR to the change log, and the bot would pick that up and the bot would do a commit that changes the change log. I don't know, something like that, but it would definitely require being self-hosted. So I don't know how we feel about that aspect.
I think losing the unreleased section sucks. I think as a first step, losing it and going with a script makes sense to me. I don't know. Thoughts from anyone else? Okay, so
I wonder if we could attach it to Travis. I wonder if it's something that could be done with Travis after a PR merge, so it wouldn't have to be self-hosted.
Yeah, that was my thought. I mean, I've done a lot of we do things for only after PR merges do we build the documentation, for example, that gets installed to the other branch. I could take a look at if you create the script to do the, or I could probably go ahead and look at that at some point, but it wouldn't be anytime soon. But I think we could probably do it with Travis. That's
you know, if you took
the logic right now that generates the docs.
Well, I'm sorry, what was that, Joe?
Where's the conditional logic right now that generates the DAW?
It's in the travis.yaml. And let's see. That's in, it starts at line 247. Right.
Okay. For
where it only runs for one particular version, right? It only does it for this particular one, and then it triggers building the docs from that one particular one. So where it's not a pull request, where it's Linux, where we're on master, using LLVM 3.9.0. You know, it's just whatever the latest one is, so that we don't run it multiple times and update multiple times. That's why there's that if, that section of if stuff around it.
Okay, I'm still not seeing something that lets us know what PR it was associated with if it's a PR merge. But I'll take a look at the Travis CI docs a little bit and see if I can come up with something.
I think there are NVARs for some of that stuff.
Yeah, okay. They stick a lot of it into that type of thing. There might be enough.
I'm just going to take a quick look here while we're on the subject so we can sort of, if it's not an option, we can put it to bed. the pull request number if the current job is a pull request. So that's not what we want, because we want it to be on pull request merge, not on the pull request testing. I'm looking at docs.travisci.com/environment variables.
I missed the beginning of this conversation. Is there an RFC or something that we're talking about?
No, it's just it's an idea that was sort of bandied around in the dev list. Basically, the goal of this particular approach that we're talking about is trying to find a way to basically run a script that will do a commit after doing a PR merge, if the PR merge meets certain requirements, and also having access to the PR content in order to do that.
All right.
So basically, I'm looking for an environment variable in Travis CI that tells you if the current commit being tested is a PR merge, and if so, what the PR number was. The only one I see so far is one that tells you if the current job is a pull request. So that's for testing.
Yeah, but I guess I'm missing the bottom line. You want to automatically update the change log?
Yes.
Is that it?
Yes.
I feel like I don't know, that sounds weird to me. We could keep this list of pending changes in the documentation itself. That might be more graceful, rather than trying to automatically do additional commits to update the change log based on, you know, magic words or tags or whatever. Like just generate a list, and then when we're doing a release, you know, manually copy paste that list in and update it and edit it and do whatever it is to make it human useful. So make this in progress changelog part of the docs.
What do you mean part of the docs?
Like make it a web page somewhere that we automatically generate.
Why that instead of keeping a running changelog in the repo?
Because having a system that automatically adds extra commits, I don't know, sort of freaks me out.
So one of the things that would be nice to avoid is, like, currently, whenever we do a release, we have to get people to rebase their changelog things if they have it, because otherwise it ends up in the wrong section, which gets to be a bit of a pain in the ass. We have stuff that doesn't get merged because we're waiting on that to happen. So I think one of the ideas behind this is to remove that as an impediment, but at the same time, you know, I very much like to have a change log, which is where I can go and look and see, like, okay, at this particular point in time, this is what would have been added to the, you know, at any given point in time. I certainly know I use like the unreleased section a lot, which is why I'm kind of like, yeah, I hate to lose it, but you know, still, it's not horrid.
Yeah, I mean, it's useful to know that stuff.
So I think a good place to start, Joe, would just be the script that gets run as part of the release process, and we could, if we get that in place, we can baby steps from there to something fuller with more pros to it.
Right. Well, if we were going to try to do the Travis CI approach, I think it would be fairly different enough that it would make sense to kind of start there. The other thing I'm worried about with using Travis CI is the possibility of, like, you know, we've had times where Travis CI is just not running our builds, and I want, you know, if it eventually comes back to those builds, I guess it would eventually add them to the changelog, but yeah, I'm not sure that we want to be, you know, given how Travis will sometimes just, like, you know, time out.
Yeah, if we merge,
want to be depending on Travis for.
Yeah, if we merge three pull requests while Travis is having an outage, then the next build after that would have to track all of the additional changes and somehow run the script three times or something. I see what you're saying there.
Yeah.
I mean, Travis allows you to rerun specific jobs, so I'm not super worried about that. But, like, again, that's something we could tackle later, and we could start with it being a by hand as part of the release process job and move from there.
Okay. So do we have any preference about using the tags and the PR titles versus using like a special syntax in the PR description, like exclamation point, change log, fixed, blah blah.
I think starting with the tags and the change log title and the PR title is a good place to start.
Okay.
It's simpler. Right. And if that starts to be problematic for ones that we have, we could always look to change it later.
Yeah. So I have a proof of concept script that currently does that. The issue is that it's in Ruby, and I would like to not have to require people doing a release to have Ruby installed on their machine. So I try to see if I can survive sanity wise of trying to convert it to a bash script.
Ooh, Bash script. Oh, I thought you were going to say Go. Everybody loves to build Go with its static binaries.
Oh, no, that would be a nightmare. to have to, yeah, they would need its own repository for the little script. And, yeah, I would just like a shell script that people can run.
Okay, I'll just let you know this ahead of time, Joe. It's a strong saying in my part of the computer world that friends don't let friends write bash scripts that are longer than five lines long. So I'm just letting you know. Godspeed if you do that.
Well, okay. I mean, here's another question then.
I can help.
Does anybody have a particular problem running? You know, if they're going to be doing a release, running Ruby on their machine, just a little Ruby script to do it?
I think if it works with, like, Ruby 1.8 or whatever and doesn't have, like, any dependencies that don't ship with, like, some baseline standard one, I think that's probably fine.
Okay, well, I'll start there, and we can I'll open a PR to that effect, and we can work from there.
Sounds good. So there's one more from the dev list, but I wanted to bring up a thing. It's related to a couple of the issues I've been looking at where issue, what is that? 643 and 517. Both of those, these are ones that people have opened where one of them is me, one is another, where if you increase the number of pony threads, you start to see memory growth explode in the applications. And I found out why. And it's going to require a longer term conversation with Sylvan to have a complete fix. But there's a pros cons fix which could be done, which we'd have to decide. We can either leave it as it is right now, where if you run more threads than the number of actors that you really have to run, you're going to experience exponential memory growth with your program. And depending on whether you're using debug or release, and I still haven't figured this part out yet, you will, with the debug one, you can OOM pretty quickly. With a release one, it takes probably several minutes, but it'll still OOM eventually. And the feature which is actually causing it is the part of the cycle detector which allows it to notice cycles where things still have references to each other and are sending each other messages but are otherwise disconnected from anything else. The tracking for that is actually what causes the massive growth in memory. And I could open a PR which would turn it off so that if you create a cycle like that in your program, it would never exit. But it would also stomp down on the massive memory growth. A longer, fuller term fix on that requires talking to Sylvan and wouldn't be something that would be coming immediately. I wanted to see if you, Joe, or Benoit, or anybody else had thoughts on whether we leave it as is or if we decide that the memory growth issue is more important than the possibly leaving disconnected cycles keeping an application running. Does that make sense?
I'd say we should leave it as it is, because if I'm not mistaken, if the cycle detector doesn't correct a cycle, the finalizers for actors are not run.
So the cycle detector in the normal scenarios for when it's terminating, that still works. This is only for the part of actually finding things where like you, if you have, let's say you had two actors where one of them was you had a TCP connection that was sending to an actor that was sending to another actor, and the third actor was sending stuff back to the second actor, and it was sending stuff in turn back to the third actor. If with it as it currently is, if you shut the TCP connection down, it will notice that those two actors, where they're talking to each other, they don't have any outside stuff coming in anymore, and it will shut down. The code that does that for those two that are disconnected from everything else and talk to each other, that's the code that causes the massive memory growth when you have more threads than you would have actors that are running. On the other hand, in the normal scenario where if you just had a TCP connection talking to, like, sending data to, say, three other actors, when the TCP connection shuts down, those three other actors will all shut down as well and their finalizers would be run. Because it's only part of the cycle detector stuff which is actually causing the memory growth.
Okay, so you said that the problem is only when you have more schedulers than actors.
Yes. It could possibly happen in other scenarios, but you can definitely trigger it there. Where basically what happens is that we prioritize the cycle detector as low as possible, but if you have additional scheduler threads which were unable to find any work to steal, etc., or whatnot, where they didn't do any work on a particular run, they send messages which get allocated out of the pool to the cycle detector, which the cycle detector is supposed to process. However, because this is happening constantly for these scheduler threads, and we try at all possible to not run the cycle detector, the cycle detector can't keep up with the number of messages that get sent in that case, and memory grows really rapidly.
Okay, so in my opinion, since in a normal program, you usually have lots of vectors. I think it's better to leave it as is, to avoid getting a penalty on the common case.
Where is there a penalty on the common case?
It's the actors not being the cycles not being detected. So in the end, you'll have some memory leaks since you don't collect that stuff, and in long running programs, I imagine that could be problematic.
So I don't, at least none of the pony programs that I've written have those kind of cycles. Is that a common thing that other people are doing? I'm curious at this point, because I consider that to be a minor feature, but I'm interested by the part where you said that was a common case. Maybe just the stuff that we're writing is rather different.
Well, actually, I don't know, but if we turn off that stuff, it's well, if you think it won't happen really often, then I think I'm good with turning it off.
Should we make it a runtime option?
I could do that for right now. I can make it a runtime option. I mean, it's basically one block of code that needs to not be executed. Before I put it in as a runtime option, I would test it some more. We're testing it out now for some of our stuff, because it seems that problem seemed to be hiding other problems that we would hit occasionally for something else that I'm chasing. So yeah, let me test it some more, and then we look into making it a short-term runtime option that we could pick, that people could pick depending on their particular case, until we come up with a longer one on it. Because I know that specifically the sending of these messages, Sylvan mentioned to me 2 weeks ago, he was like, hey, I was talking to this guy at Microsoft, and I think we came up with a way to avoid having to send block messages but still being able to detect cycles, which would be awesome. And that would solve the problem.
Yeah, so as I understand it, just to make sure I understand correctly, the cycle detector is finding graphs of actors that are not connected to any other graph that is currently active. So basically an entire graph of actors who have connections to each other, but no way to receive messages from unblocked actors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And that functionality, when combined with having threads which are not scheduler threads, which are not regularly picking up work, will lead to the explosion in terms of the cycle detector's queue size.
Okay. I kind of feel like we shouldn't just get rid of it, but making a runtime option sounds totally reasonable, because it sounds like it has, you know, trade-offs that could be documented and chosen, and you can run your application pretty easily, you know, using one or the other and see how it performs.
Yeah, and it's certainly a short-term fix to a longer-term one, because in the end, we want to be able to detect those cycles, and we also don't want to have like these cases which would be easy for somebody to stumble across, particularly when they're starting of where memory usage just explodes. And you can get it even in simple applications where, you know, when I was first starting it, I was like, why does this thing that has three actors, why when I run it by default on my machine where Pony picks four scheduler threads, why do I see this memory growth that I shouldn't be seeing? What's going on? This looks like a GC leak.
you know, so yeah, I'll do that for the runtime one. That sounds good. Does anybody have anything else? No. All right. Thanks for coming, everyone, then. Hey, Joe. I won't be around for next week's, probably. I'm going to be in London, and I don't think Sylvan will be around next week either, because I know he's headed from Cambridge to London to Amsterdam next Wednesday around this time. So I don't think either one of us would be at next week's.
Okay.
But I'll send you my Zoom info so you can run it. Yes.
Yeah.
And be able to record. Cool. All right. I'll send you all the info in an email. All right. I'll talk to y'all later. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.